The recordings have started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the Policy and Implementation Working Group call on the 30th of July, 2014. On the call today, we have Cheryl Langdon Orr, Jonathan Frost, Olivi Kouami, Chuck Gomes, and Tom Barrett. We have apologies from Jay Scott Evans, June Ojaji, Wolf Ulrich Nobin, and Ann Aikman Scalise. From staff, we have Steve Chen, Mary Wong, Amy Bivens, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would also like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Chuck.
Thank you very much, Terry. Much appreciated. This is Chuck Gomes, and let's jump right in. To start with, if there are no objections, I'm going to change the order of the agenda and move item 4 up to number 2. It should only take just a few minutes, and we had that on there last week and didn't get to it, so we will keep the rest of the order of items the same. Are there any objections to that? I see Cheryl's okay with that. Thank you, Cheryl. All right, then let's go ahead and go to what was item 4, review of deliverable item 1, item F, which basically is just to review the input that we've received from the three groups that submitted input after we requested it, and we need to review that related to deliverable one only at this time. And what I'd like to do is to see if we can get one volunteer each for each of the submissions. We received comments from the ALAC, the ISCPC, and the registry stakeholder group. And what we need each individual to do is just take a quick look at those items and see if they have any input that we want to record with regard to deliverable one, which we're almost completed with in the working group going through it. So my estimate is that it shouldn't probably even take an hour's worth of work. We need you to familiarize yourself with the deliverable one, which you probably are already familiar. Do a quick read of the comments that were submitted, and then report to the group whether there was anything, any comments that we should add to our record on deliverable one. If we could, and I think it's probably better if someone who's not associated with the group that submitted comments to do the task. Mainly, I like thinking of myself. If I do the registry comments, I've read them too many times, so I might miss stuff. If somebody could read them fresh and then just see relative to deliverable one whether there are any comments that we need to incorporate into our work record, that's all we're looking for. I think it's probably in maybe less than an hour task, but if we could get one person for the ALAC comments, one for the ISCPC comments, and then one for the registry comments, and if you can get it done before our next meeting, that's nice. But if it took a couple weeks, I think that's okay too. So, any volunteers to do just take on one of these, and so if we can get three volunteers, that would be really helpful. Do we have anybody that would like to take the ALAC comments? And Mary, you'll send a link or attachment with the specific comments to make it easy on people, correct?
Absolutely, Chuck.
Thank you.
Jack Sherrill here. I was talking to you, but I was on mute. I was going to say, obviously, I won't do the ALEC one, because now you've asked about that. That would be a little silly, but I'm happy to pick up the registry if you want me to.
Okay. Thank you. So we have the registries covered. Thank you very much, Cheryl. Is there anyone who will volunteer for the ALAC or the ISCPC?
Yes, I'm volunteer. Only years, nothing.
Which one are you going to take, Olivier?
ISCPC.
ISCPC. Thank you very much. So we've got two covered. All we need is someone to take the ALAC comments. One more volunteer, and then we're done with this agenda item.
Chuck, it's Michael. Give me 2 weeks, and I'll take that on.
You've got 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Okay. So, you also got applause from Cheryl, which is very valuable, so you should appreciate it.
Appreciate
Thanks.
It.
Thanks. Okay. Let's move on then to the next agenda item, which is to review the chart, the flow charts, and I suspect that Mary is putting those up right now. They're up. Now, if you happen to have a copy on your computer that you can pull up so that you can see the whole charts, that's helpful. I know I have a copy readily accessible here for me so that I can see the whole charts. If you don't, that's okay. It looks like it's all up. Now, it's pretty hard to read if your eyes are like mine, and I have a bigger monitor. So, But we'll make our way through it. Now, hopefully everyone on the call reviewed the charts. Note that there is the first chart is the GNSO policy process options. That's a first cut. If there's some request for action that's taken, that's kind of the overview. And you'll see that there's three results that can end up there. It can result in a PDP. It can result in what is suggested. This is just very preliminary, a policy guidance process. And third, it could end up into what is initially being called a policy input process. The next two charts, and we're not going to go through them in detail because you can do that yourselves and probably already have. The next one shows a draft for a policy guidance process. And the third one is for a policy input process. In discussing these, we're going to go over the questions that Mary included and that Marika asked a week or so ago that are in the bulleted items at the bottom of the agenda. And we'll take one of those at a time and just open it up for discussion. So the first question is, do the two draft processes, policy guidance process and policy input process, align with the working group's thinking and discussions to date? And if not, what other processes or elements would need to be explored? And I will open up the queue now. Anybody would like to respond to those, that would be great. Olivier, you're not in the Adobe Connect, so please speak up if you want to comment. Okay, and I'll get you in the queue. So, what do you think? Do these two draft processes, as outlined right now, and they're not final or anything, but is this the right direction based on the thinking in the working group so far? Anybody think that they're contrary to our thinking? Mary, go ahead, please.
Thanks, Chan. Obviously, I'm not going to give input on that question. That's for the working group to discuss. But as people are thinking, I guess it may be worth recalling that these are, as you pointed out, the two additional processes to the existing PDP. And the intent was for the policy input process to be the flexible, most lightweight one, whereas the policy guidance process, which we have on the screen now, the PGP, it's, you know, the next two questions will illustrate this better, but, you know, clearly it has to be distinguished from a lightweight, quick, flexible process like the policy input process. It's not quite a policy development process. So it's a little bit in between, and that's why we put in a few questions in the chat itself and on the right here for you folks to think about in terms of voting thresholds and so forth. So hopefully that's helpful.
Thank you, Mary. This is Chuck. Cheryl, you're next.
Thank you, Cheryl, for the record. In answer to your first question, not the second one, because your second one was a negative, and I'm not in the negative, yes, it is, note the slight tonal change in my voice. It is in general keeping, it's one of those at this stage. We've obviously got more work to do on it. The only part that I'm a little disquieted about, and it is only a little bit of disquiet, is me bringing a whole lot of, I'll use the term baggage, but not in a negative sense, because some of us have been more engaged over the years and have, I would trust, a better understanding on what the guidelines for the policy development process is. And so when we see the term PDP, it brings, you know, 64 pages worth of how we do that with us, right? And I know with the heavier weight one, the guidance process, the question is there, should the same guidelines be used? I think it's the absence of guidelines in all three, whether they are variations on the theme or entirely different guidelines, I'm not really fussed about. But I just think I'm concerned that I'm saying yes too easily because I'm bringing my guideline experience and my actual experience with me. And so I'm agreeing, but I'm also hesitant because I might be bringing a whole pile of bias there.
Thank you, Cheryl. Chuck again. Are you, in essence, saying that guidelines are needed for these two new processes as well?
I am a policy princess, absolutely, yes.
Thank you. Chuck again. Is anybody now? That's really a good answer to the second part of the question. You know, what elements need to be explored, and so certainly guidelines for those, which some of the remaining questions start to get into, at least in some respects. So, thank you for that very much, Cheryl, appreciate that. Anybody else? Is there anybody that thinks that the early stages of these processes are contrary to the working group's thinking so far? Okay, not seeing any hands or hearing anyone. Let's go on to the next question, and we will. I am going to assume, as chair, that those on the call today think that this is in the right direction. And with the added qualification that Cheryl added there that will be in our meeting notes. So what voting thresholds should be associated with initiating a policy guidance process or alike, as well as adoption of recommendations? Now, let me qualify that a little bit. We don't necessarily have to start putting numbers to the thresholds right now. We might want to. It might be easier to start off just in general. There are specific thresholds for a PDP, different processes of the PDP. Okay, initiating one is a much lower threshold than recommendations out of that, and so forth. So if it's easier to talk in terms of relative to what's required for in the PDP guidelines now, should it differ with regard to a policy guidance process or even a policy input process? And Cheryl, you're up again.
Thank you, Cheryl, for the record. This is where I get a little less than flexible. That was the best way I could put it. I am, as you know, prefer the whole consensus, and I'm happy to have the variations on the theme of consensus that is in the policy development process guidelines. That's fine. We've worked on that. We understand it, and we should use that. But when voting levels or threshold levels are required, I think we need to have similarity in the processes. I think it's a very silly idea, particularly if you're trying to engage a wider audience or more or less experienced or new players and stakeholders in future processes, to have too much variation on the theme. So I'm very much in the let's keep it all the same. So if there is a staging where you need a simple majority at one level or a super majority at the other, then we should stick with that across all of them to whatever extent is possible. Thank you.
Chuck again. So, Cheryl, you're saying that thresholds should be the same for all three.
Yes, I do.
That's good. I'm just repeating just to confirm and make sure, and so that we capture it very precisely. So that's what I understood. So thank you for confirming that. Michael, you're up.
Yeah, and I guess I agree with that, but with the caveat, what are those levels? Is it simple majority to initiate and then a supermajority to implement? Are those generally the levels? So we can actually write them into the chart here.
Mary, go ahead. I'll let you respond to that.
Actually, Chuck, I'll bet you know these better than I do. So, you know, and especially, I guess, for the benefit of those who are not familiar with the GNSO's procedures, and here we're just talking about initiating the process, not about approving a charter or anything else or amending a charter or even approving the ultimate recommendations, right? So in terms of initiating a PDP, there's two possible thresholds under the bylaws. That one, it depends on whether the PDP is within scope, and if it is, then it's a third of both houses or two-thirds of one house. If the PDP is not within scope, then clearly you do need a higher threshold, then it's two-thirds of both or three-quarter of one and more than half of another. It sounds confusing when I describe it. We do have a chart I can send around, but essentially I wanted to make the point that it's not a single threshold, but it does depend on what the scope is. Chuck?
Thank you very much, Mary. Chuck again. And you did that very well. You did it much better than I could have done. But in case of, in the, let me comment on this. That's not why I put my hand up at all. I'll come back to that. The threshold, if an issue is in scope, is really quite low. Okay. And there's been debate over the years whether it's too low or whatever, but it's pretty low just to initiate a PDP. So does that help, Michael?
Yeah, that helps on that end, definitely.
Okay, thank you. What I was going to comment is a little less on the thresholds, and that's why I put my hand up to get it, put myself in the queue, is the thresholds are important, because they require, I think in most cases, the counselors to go back to their groups in making these decisions. And that's really in their own charters that covers that, whether they have to or not. Or maybe they already have enough information from their stakeholder group or constituency to be able to weigh in on a vote whether to initiate one of these processes. My biggest concern in all three of these things is that we never put the council into a legislative situation where they just decide what's best. We want that bottom-up input from their groups in making the decisions, and that has probably less specifically to do with with the thresholds themselves, then we want to avoid the council being put into a situation where they make a decision without consulting their respective stakeholders with regard to that decision. So that's kind of a general comment, and and thanks for the agreement on that, Cheryl. I appreciate that. Anybody else have comments on the thresholds for initiating one of these processes? And Chuck, continuing, does anybody disagree with the concept that the thresholds should be the same across all three? At least at this stage of the game. We could come back and revisit that later, but for right now, I'm not seeing anybody disagreeing. Mary, go ahead, please.
Thanks, Chuck. And maybe I should add here that when Marika and I were putting this together, we put in this voting threshold question, and you notice that any time there's a voting threshold mentioned in these charts, there's a question, simply because we wanted to distinguish the PGP, as we're calling it, from the PIP. But one option is that even though for the PIP at the moment we're saying no voting threshold is required, that it may be that you folks think a preferable option even for this policy guidance process is to not have a voting threshold or not require a council vote in the first place. I don't know if that's something that you want to discuss, but it is certainly an option. In other words, this isn't set in stone.
Thank you very much, Mary. Chuck again. So let me come back to Cheryl, and she's kind of come back on her own. Cheryl, why don't you comment on that? Because I assumed, and I want to make sure that I assume correctly or be informed if I didn't, that you were saying the same thing for all three. Is that a correct assumption? Why don't you just go ahead and comment, please?
Thank you, Chachara, for the record. And that big red X that came up for me when Mary was speaking about the hypotheticals and possibilities was because you are absolutely correct. I actually think that there should be thresholds for all three. And let me tell you why. In all of these cases, significant resources, human and otherwise, are going to be put into play, and I think that's something that should be taken seriously and should have at least the council engaged at the level that it is for that reason. But for another reason, I would not like to set up a system where a lot can be going on, very important work that needs to be recognised by the council as occurring in the bottom-up consensus-building way that we want to do things, without them being forced to be damn well involved, and at least making them vote and be accountable to their constituencies has that as a fail-safe. So, no, I think they should exist, and it should exist across all three. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Chuck again. And you know, you're reinforcing the exact point I was saying about not turning the council into a legislative body, even for a PIP. So I'm in agreement with you on that there should be a threshold for the PIP as well, and it should be the same as the others, whatever those are, at any given point in time. Does anybody disagree with that? Do you think that there doesn't need to be a threshold for the PIP, or that it should be lower or whatever? And I'll turn it over to Mary while you're thinking about that.
Thanks again, Chuck. And again, this is in a response to your question. I think what the group might want to then think about, if it goes that way, is to be clear, you know, in terms of whether there will be other options for the council. And I'm thinking of the current situation where clearly we have neither the PGP nor the PIP. The council does have the ability and the freedom to do things like set up a small group of volunteers, perhaps to respond to a point made by the board or the GAC or something. And we have examples of that. That group of volunteers might turn into a drafting team, or you know, it might ultimately be decided that a letter response without too much hoops in the process is the best way to go. So I guess the point I'm making is for the group to consider, A, if this is the option, that all three voting thresholds, what would happen to that flexibility, or perhaps maybe just making it clear that it doesn't really affect the flexibility as long as it's clear that each of these processes apply to fairly specific situations.
Thank you, Mary. Chuck again. Michael, you're up.
Yeah, I'm just trying to digest what Mary just said. My feeling was that there should be thresholds. I see a danger in there not being thresholds, in that these actual devices and procedures could be misused to misdirect efforts if they were allowed to be cobbled together for any reason, for any purpose, and some dissenting purpose if there wasn't some clear guidelines in what the threshold might be. I don't think that that limits the ability of these structures to be alternatives to the PDP. And I suppose it's something that was a thought that I had as well in looking at the initial process, which was a PDP process, which included as, pure alternatives, the PGP and the PIP, and sort of wondering whether or not a PDP group, for example, might determine that what they had been tasked with doing might better be classified or considered to be either a PGP or a PIP, or that something along the course of their deliberations might be useful to issue back to the board, again, as a guidance or input. I was digesting what Mary said, because the one part of determining what the, the subject matter or what sort of matters might be appropriate to these, I think if we start trying to define those at this point, I think that's where we might be cutting into the ability to use these as, alternative means of the GNSO approaching issues and challenges before it, and being able, I basically see that as being a point at which what brought us all here, the discussion of is it policy or is it implementation, might then take place at the is this X so that it's appropriate to guidance, or is this Y and it's appropriate to input, or is it Z, it can only be a PDP. So I think putting those strictures on or defining too greatly might limit the ability to use these structures freely and as necessary. But I do believe that some sort initial vote should be required for either of these, so they don't become a dissenter's haven, I guess.
Thank you very much, Michael. And before I go to Cheryl, this is Chuck. I didn't note Jonathan's check mark of agreement earlier, and I think he's agreeing to the same thing that Cheryl and Michael and I have all said in regard to this question. So thanks, Jonathan, for that. Cheryl, your turn.
Sorry, clearing my throat. Cheryl, for the record here. I just wanted to pick up on obviously I'm agreeing with what Michael was saying, but with what Mary was saying, I with those sort of lighter touches, and not necessarily lighter in some cases, but more nimble approaches where you've got a small working group or a letter of recommendation, letter, et cetera, being raised. That's just an earlier decision note in my point. It may be that as a result of those initial reactive, more nimble mechanisms, it just what the outcome of that process is the outcome, and nothing more needs to be done. Or in that lighter touch process happening, a clear decision node may occur where you go, oh, we need a PGP or a PIP, or this needs to be probably a PDP. And that's okay. It can occur and have a connection into what we're doing as a an input, looking at whether or not there's a part of the invocation. I don't think we need to necessarily draw a line to the invocation phases, but I don't find there's any negative or mutually exclusive nature of those things. I think they can coexist quite nicely. And everyone realises that even with our model of PIP here, there is still time involved. So there's going to be times when GNSO has to respond more quickly to more urgent matters than even these processes allow. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. Chuck again. And thanks, Michael, for checking agreement as Cheryl was talking there. I have an interesting side question for the group. If you were to classify our working group, the Policy and Implementation Working Group, which category would you put it in? I know we don't have those other two categories yet, but we're not a PDP working group. So are we a policy guidance process?
Yep.
In a very early stage of this whole thinking?
Yep.
Okay. We don't really need to discuss that, but it's a question that popped into my head as we're going along here. Let me ask Mary. I think there seems to be pretty clear consensus on from those on the call today on this, and do you need any clarification on that, Mary, in terms of the note-taking?
Well, I guess if I may quickly just sum up, I think what I'm hearing is that the all three process options, and we'll leave the PDP aside because that already exists, so the two new ones both should have voting thresholds, including the PIP, but that shouldn't preclude the existence of the nimbler mechanisms that Cheryl is talking about. I think what, looking back at this chart and the first one showing the three options, I think I'm still a little, concerned. I agree entirely with Cheryl that there shouldn't be, foreclosure of those other options. But the way that we have it on this chart probably does not make that clear. So we might need to go back and rephrase at least the first chart of these three to make sure that those more nimbler mechanisms are accommodated.
That makes sense to me. And I see check mark from Cheryl on that. Greg, your turn.
Greg Shatton here. I am all for more nimbler processes, but what concerns me is a process that may leave the process entirely within the GNSO Council, and that may end up with a threshold that is subject to the GNSO Council voting thresholds rather than a consensus thresholds. For policy output. And I wonder whether the policy input process is one that should be nimble enough to respond quickly. I know we don't know exactly what these processes, other than the PDP, entail. But whatever the process is, and nimble it may be, I don't think it should be a GNSO Council business as usual ad hoc type of process, whether it's ad hoc or not. And my thinking is that our part of what we're trying to accomplish here is to essentially replace the kind of ad hoc. Let's find some way to respond to this request for policy input or guidance or whatever it is for a policy type statement, and let's figure out what it is this time. And it may be we're going to write a letter, and we're going to vote on whether this letter is going to go out from the council. While we obviously can't handcuff the council completely, I think we want to create processes that are nimble enough, but that are, you know, go beyond kind of the typical council self-regulated process that has been brought into place on an ad hoc basis in the absence of a well-planned, nimble GNSO process. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. This is Chuck. Let me turn it over to Jonathan.
I don't think what I'm saying is disagreeing with anybody, but when we have a PDC replacing or substitute process, I think there should be a very sharp, bright line rule to the fact is, I don't have nearly as much experience as I can as anyone else in this room, but when like a legislative body or any group of people, they want to be efficient and they want to get things done, so they will always opt for the more, quote, nimble process if it's available to them. So, if they get the PIP instead of a PDP for anything, I think they would opt to because you get things done faster. So, I think there should be, I think it should be very clear when it's appropriate. And
you broke up just a little bit there, Jonathan. Could you repeat the last thing that you said there? Jonathan?
Sorry about that. I guess my mic cut out. This is Jonathan again. I think there should be a bright line rule because if you don't want to use the PDP, because the body that decides whether or not to use it will offer the more nimble process.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's Chuck again. Let me do a little check at this point. I think I'm hearing everyone say that whichever one of these directions are chosen, it shouldn't just be a GNSO council decision without some interaction with the communities that that the councilors represent. Thanks, Cheryl, for that check mark. Now, I think we all also are in agreement that those processes, the processes in the community need to be such that can happen very quickly in some cases, but not just a unilateral decision by the GNSO Council. So I wonder, and I don't know that it fits into these charts or what the best way is to capture it, but where it seems to me we should document the fact that whichever one of these three options that we're looking at right now are chosen, they all need to involve interaction with the respective communities that are represented on the council. Thanks, Cheryl. Okay, anybody disagree with that? That was kind of a summary of what I'm hearing and with the idea of confirming that I'm reading it correctly. And I see another check mark down there. I need to scroll down. There we go. Thank you, Michael. Okay. All right. Well, let's go on then to the third question, which is should board consideration of recommendations following a policy guidance process or similar follow the same process as currently used for PDP recommendations? Now, this question, by its very wording, delves into the bylaws, I think even more so than the other questions, although they might too. So before opening up to others, let me let Mary comment on this.
Hi, Chuck, and it may be that you can discuss this as part of question three as well, but question two spoke both of initiating one of these processes as well as adopting the recommendations that come out of them. So I'm assuming that since in talking about initiation, the group would like to have voting and voting thresholds for all three, that we also need voting thresholds for adopting the recommendations that come out. So I guess I'm wondering if we simply adopt what Cheryl has mentioned for the initiation part, which is, well, you know, if we're going to use the same thing to initiate, then it makes sense to do the same thing to adopt.
Good point, Mary. Chuck again. My own personal assessment, but I'll give people a chance to disagree, and Cheryl already agreed. So I'm assuming that we would take the same position on adoption of recommendations as we did on initiating one of the processes. If anybody disagrees with that, please put a red X in the Adobe or speak up if you'd like. So I think that's a fair conclusion, Mary. Thank you. So let's go back then. What about board the board requirements for dealing with a PGP or a PIP in contrast to a PDP? The bylaws spell out what needs to happen in the case of a PDP depending on the level of support from the GNSO. What do you think about the issues of these two new proposed processes? Cheryl, please.
Thanks, Chuck. Cheryl, for the record. This is a question I had a little more problem just going, yeah, yeah, sure on. I understand that there could be advantages in saying yes, yes, sure on, but now I'm going to drag with me some what I think is conditional advantage to what the at-large advisory committee has managed to do with the ICANN board in the past, because it has well outside of any bylaw requirements over some time, but I'm sure if we can train them, so can you, managed to get the board to understand that the at-large advisory committee makes statements, gives advice, and will give comments, and that those three things are entirely different. They have different levels, different weightings, different presumptions of how much attention how much understanding the board should have as to what degree of consensus and from where that consensus is drawn. In one case, it goes right out to the edge communities. And that's been a worthwhile exercise and has given a great deal of power, I think, to the ALAC in making the board understand what community view is versus what the at-large advisory committee view is, remembering that the ALAC has a lot more autonomy than the GNSO Council does. And so what that experience kind of biases me towards thinking there might be an advantage in if you can make the board understand what the differences are and yet respect all of those differences and react accordingly and with a mandatory reaction of some sort, so feedback has to happen, then my answer is no. But if we can't retrain them and all I will do is whatever the bylaws say, my answer is yes. Long answer, but I needed to get it off my chest.
This is Chuck. Cheryl, so let me get you to pursue that just a little bit further so that I'm clear. So if there is a clear understanding on the part of the board in terms of the level of support for these new processes, then you don't think the thresholds for the board have to be the same? Did I get that right?
Yes, you got that right, and that's the conditional part. It's not necessarily the thresholds and the reaction. See, the GNSO has a very good bylaw basis for how the board has to react depending on what level of support things have when it gets there. Right? And that's a really powerful thing, and that needs to stay. I don't necessarily think that same set of requirements need to be applied across the board for all three levels, the three that we're looking at the moment. But I think some level of response and reaction needs to be, I won't use the term mandate lightly, but expected for all three outcomes of all three things. So if PDP is clear, that's in the bylaws. For a PGP and a PIP, they should have to respond, but I'm not sure if it's in the identical mechanisms that the bylaws outline now for the PGP. Did I confuse you or did I help you?
No, Cheryl, that was very good, and that's what I thought you were saying, but I, again, wanted to make sure that we captured that in the record so it was clear, and it's clear to me now. If anybody else has questions, please feel free to ask. Chuck speaking again. I don't know if I said that or not. And personally, I'm in full agreement with you that in all three cases, there needs to be a response from the board. That's mandatory. The detailed requirements related to the response might vary a little bit, and we can look at that more as we dig down on the specifics of these two new processes. Thanks, Cheryl, very much. Any other comments on this third question? Okay, and I assume anybody that disagreed with anything that's been said so far would speak up. All right, let's go to question number four. Should the working group explore a policy guidance process or similar to also be available to develop modified consensus policy recommendations in those limited circumstances in which either limited changes need to be made following implementation of a consensus policy based on data gathered or practical experience, or where additional scoping information is already available based on previous efforts? So as I understand this question, a key qualifier is that it's after implementation of a consensus policy, and we've gathered some data, we've learned some things. Would it be appropriate to initiate a policy guidance process in that kind of or something similar instead of initiating a new PDP to deal with the changes? And I'll open that up for discussion. And I hope I qualified that the question properly. What do you think about that?
Oh, dear, my screen's frozen. I can't seem to get rid of my... there I am. Cheryl here for the record. Sorry, to, but now I can put my hand up. That part of my screen was covered by my my touchpad keyboard thing. I couldn't put my hand up. Sorry.
You're on.
My answer is yes, but...
Go ahead.
Now I've muted myself, sorry. My answer is yes, but I think it, particularly if we're trying to utilise the advantages of a PGP and a PIP opportunity, then being, by design I would hope, more nimble, more reactive, but still engaging with as many opportunities for bottom-up consensus building as possible. That seems smart. Just because it was a PDP in the first place doesn't mean that every change you make in course correction in the future based on good reasons and experience needs to be a PGP to change the PGP. I think my answer is definitely yes, it can be the others. But the but part is I think we need to have a clear... The decision as to which one it needs to be has to be made in a really open and transparent manner, because I don't know why, but I just feel maybe... I just don't want to have a loophole somehow developed here, that's all.
Yeah. Thanks, Cheryl. Chuck again. And I think this is consistent with everything else that's been said on this call. We none of us want that loophole. Not even at this stage. So I certainly agree with what you're saying. Anybody disagree with that? Please speak up if you do, or raise your hand, or put a X, a red X, in Adobe. Thanks, Jonathan, for the agreement there. And let's see who that was. Michael. I wish Adobe yep. would arrange their technology so that the agrees pop up to the top like the raised hands do, because I can only, if you have quite a few people on a call, you can never see that without scrolling down. So thank you very much.
Tom's got a check mark down there too, Chuck.
Oh, thanks, Tom. And let me scroll down. I didn't scroll down far enough. Yeah, thanks, Tom. See, that's the problem. That's why I wish Adobe would fix that. So thank you very much. Okay, and not seeing any disagreement, let's quickly go to the last question. So we at least spent a little bit of time on that. Notice it says not necessarily for deliverable one. Okay. How do these processes align with a possible process that would need to be available during implementation of policy recommendations and that could be invoked by implementation review teams or GNSO Council in case policy or implementation issues are identified that need further consideration by the broader community? I don't think that needs any explanation, but let me just open it up. This is really a live issue because it relates to a lot of what happened during the new GTLD implementation process. Michael, you're first.
Yeah, I'm just looking at this question, and it seems to me really appropriate when we do start talking about some of the implementation type of processes. But I could see where an IRT might be issuing a suggestion to the GNSO Council to request policy guidance or implementation. It's just I'd like to see that next screen where we have sort of either the IRT or the IRT, how that sort of structure would relate to the implementation process that might lead them to try to trigger one of these guidance or a PIP or PGP. And I think that's sort of how they would relate, and not really be an alignment, but be a resource that IRT could go to during the implementation of policy.
Thank you, Michael. It's Chuck again, and so you actually would be okay with that. One of these new processes, probably more than likely the policy guidance process, but it might be a PIP too. It could be used during a phase of implementation where, in fact, by the IRT.
And that's the question that I would have. I guess initially I would think it would be something that the IRT could propose to the GNSO so that there's still that protection against, a minority sort of position kicking off something this large, so that it would still have that that threshold requirement and also still be going through the GNSO. But I suppose very similar processes could also be set up for an implementation team, review team to use, just if it's the same sort of structure that we're setting out for the BGP, PIP, I do think that it would be, sort of a circular path. The IRT would determine that they've reached a question that needs some policy guidance or input, pop that up, that recommendation to the GNSO, and maybe it's part of their final findings. Then the GNSO would actually trigger one of these two things.
Thank you very much, Michael. Chuck, again, and before I give it to Cheryl, a really key point with regard to IRTs is that IRTs aren't necessarily representative of the full community. Mm-hmm. You really want, in some cases, and of course the registrar transfer policy is a really good example of this. What was really needed there is a lot of registrar participation, and it wasn't so critical for some of the other constituencies and stakeholder groups to have as much representation there. They're welcome, of course, but it therefore it does need to still go through. I mean, the IRT doesn't invoke one of these processes. It goes through the GNSO process like we've been talking about. Cheryl, your turn.
Thanks. And while you were talking, Michael, my thumb was over the agree button or the raise hand button, and I couldn't really decide which I wanted to do. because, I mean, I want to agree with you, don't get me wrong. And I do agree with you. It's just that there was one of those buts. It's a day for buts, I'm afraid. Yes, is my agreement point. I think that I hadn't thought along those lines, so I'm sort of chewing this over at the same time as my mouth is working, which is always a worry. But if I've got my brain in gear, I would like to certainly pick up on the fact that what Chuck said is important, that these things need to be recognised for what they are, and also that whilst, as Mary's point in the chat is, they are a regular practice, but they are not required, and that also is important. So it's one of those, if an IRT is in existence, then it should be limited, though, to... No, my question is, sorry, should it be limited to only being able to go to one of those two processes, the GP or the IP, so people with PGPs? Or do we want to open the door further and say, if an IRT is so concerned about where they are in the scheme of things and such new revelations or community pressure come to pass, that the opportunity to test back through the council and back with community should allow them to go to either any or all of the three pathways? In other words, go back to a PDP if needs be. So that was my reason for hovering. That's probably too giant a door to kick open. But then my question is, why wouldn't you if there was a new information, new experience, new material, greater pressure, or simply, you know, a majority now thinks that there's an issue? So devil's advocate and on the top of the hour, sorry, Chuck.
No, that, thank you, Cheryl. I think that was well said. Anybody disagree with that? Any additional comments on this? So I think we covered the questions here, at least for those that are on the call. And for those that are on the call, and you don't need this right now, it's all those who aren't on the call that need this, but I'll say it for future reference. The expectation is that when you miss a call, that you will look at the notes and listen to the MP3 as needed, and certainly if you have any disagreements or comments to add, that you will do that on the list, so that we can kind of continue to make progress without going back each week and reviewing what we did the last week, except for a very brief time at the beginning for anybody to make comments. So if you miss a call in the future, all of you, I think, understand that requirement, and I think that's been communicated to others as well. We have reached the end of our time period. This has been a great call, in my opinion. I'm biased, of course. But the nice job, the contributions by everybody have been excellent. I think we made some good progress, and I believe that next week then, other than allowing for any few minutes for any comments from people who weren't here, we can move right into finishing off deliverable one, and in particular the last two questions, B and C, so under E. So any final comments before we adjourn? Okay. Thanks, everybody. Have a good rest of the week.
Thanks a lot, Chuck. Have a great trip.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, bye. Chuck. Thanks, everyone. Thanks. Bye.
Mary,
bye.
You'll send me the registry group stuff?
Yes, I will.
Thanks, all. Okay, bye.
No worries. Bye.
Andrew, if you can please stop the recording. Once again, that does conclude today's conference call. Thank you very much for joining.